So I want to share with you from the 28th chapter of 1 Samuel. And it says in verse 1, "Now it happened in those days that the Philistines gathered together for war to fight with Israel. And Achish said to David, 'You surely know that you will not go out with me to battle with you and your men.'" So it's that time where David is now active. It's in the last days of Saul. But as this is taking place, if you look in verse 3, it says he's missing something. "And now Samuel had died, and all Israel had lamented for him and buried him in Ramah in his own city. And then it says, and Saul had put the mediums and the spiritists out of the land." We'll come back to that important little note in the text in just a moment. But I want to share with you tonight what we look at Samuel. And I've entitled this, "All Good Things Don't Come to an End." Because for a believer, and this is the great hope we have as believers in Christ, when we say goodbye to someone that is dear to us, when we think about our own departure someday to go to that land that you just sung about, that we have this hope that is not the end. And one of the things I learned from this story, and one of the things I think God wants to teach, of many things He wants to teach from this account, is that there is always opportunities to serve. Even death will not end our opportunities to serve our God together. So that being the case, we have this opportunity to continue to serve Him. And I just want to share 5 things with you, and then 5 reactions to those things as we go through the text tonight. It was a time of great turmoil in Saul's life, because Samuel is now gone. And it tells a little bit about this that was going on in verse 4. "The Philistines gathered together and came to encamped at Shunem. So Saul gathered all Israel together, and they camped at Gilboa. And Saul saw the army of the Philistines. When Saul saw the army of the Philistines, he was afraid, and his heart trembled greatly. Then Saul inquired of the Lord," which was common for his position in his time, to go and ask God, "What should we do?" Ask for God's favor, God's protection, God's deliverance. But you recall what we've looked at in Saul's life to this point, that Saul basically had reached the point of no return with God. God had departed from him, and with Samuel being gone, he didn't even have that connection. And it says in verse 6, "When Saul inquired of the Lord did not answer him either by dreams or by Urim or by the prophets." Those were all methodologies that you find in the Old Testament about how God communicated with His people. Visions and dreams. You think of Joseph back in the book of Genesis, how God revealed things to him in that manner. He also talks at the end there about the prophets, those that were the spokesman for God. There was no prophet that stepped forward to say, "I have a word from God for you, Saul." And then it says by the Urim. I don't want to take much time to look at that, but back in the book of Exodus, when God is telling, in chapter 28, as God is telling Moses about how the priesthood is to operate and how the garments of a priest are to be constructed and the garments of the high priest, how they are to be fitted, he mentions that built into, somehow, into this chest covering of the priest's garments, the high priest's garments, there were objects known as the Urim and the Thummim. Literally, it means in Hebrew, lights and perfections. And frankly, that's all God says in the text about how it operated. Somehow we don't have the operation manual about how this took place. Some people believe that there were 2 stones, maybe different colors, and it was sort of like God guiding through the casting of lots, which also occurred in the Old Testament. And maybe the priest would reach in, and depending on which color God was seen to supernaturally select, that would be the yes or the no. Some believe, but since it talks about lights and perfections, perhaps they would actually glow or light up or some other way communicate. So we don't really know. But he goes to the high priest and he goes and seeks this methodology. "Lord, would you speak to me?" He's met with absolute deafening silence. In his desperation, here's what he does. Even though it said in verse 3 that he got rid of all the mediums and the spiritists, these were those that claim to be able to talk to the dead and receive messages via the dead on the other side and get some kind of spiritual insight into life. Verse 7, "Then Saul said to his servants, 'Find me a woman who is a medium, that I may go to her and inquire of her.' And his servant said to him, 'In fact, there is a woman who is a medium in Endor.'" So Saul disguised himself and put on other clothes, and he went and two men with him. And they came to the woman by night, and he said, "Please conduct a seance for me, and bring up for me the one whom I shall name to you," which would have been her practice. But interesting what she says in verse 9. Then the woman said to him, "Look, you know what Saul has done. He has cut off the mediums and the spiritists from the land. Why then do you lay a snare for my life to cause me to die?" You kind of get the impression she, even in disguise, she kind of figured out what's going on. She knows something's up at least. And Saul swore to her, verse 10, "By the Lord." Don't you just find that just absolutely dripping with irony? The God who he'd turned his back on, the God who had rejected him, the God that wouldn't speak to him, the God that he's disobeying at the very moment, "I promise you in God's name I'm not going to kill you." Saying, "As the Lord lives, no punishment shall come upon you for this thing." Then the woman said, "Whom shall I bring up for you?" And he said, "Bring up Samuel for me." Now, I don't want to get too much into this. I'm going to look at it from Samuel's point of view as best we can. But I shared this back in the summer in one of our evening series. It was a series we called "Does the Bible Really Talk About That?" And one of the subjects that we looked at that was, can we speak to the dead? And oftentimes this passage of Scripture is brought out to say something about that. Well, I want to I'll repeat some of it, and that's all online if you want to go back and read the notes or listen. But basically, this is not a manual for how we should behave. Remember who is doing what. And God has forbidden in the Old Testament, he had forbidden that any would consult with the medium or be involved in these occultish activities. God was very much opposed to that. And he says that several places. He says it in Leviticus 19:3. He says it in Deuteronomy 18:9 and following. He says again in Isaiah chapter 8 that this was outlawed. In fact, Saul himself was putting them out of the land because this was not healthy. Well, then, Pastor, how does this occur? Well, I would assume that most of the occasions when someone is claiming to draw up the dead, either it is a human hoax or it is a demon-inspired or demon-empowered hoax, if you will. And in fact, as you'll see in just a moment, when Samuel comes back from the dead and speaks, she's as shocked as anybody that she's actually seeing Saul come back from the dead. So I think we could just say that there's nothing here that is normative for us. But here's the great news. God can do anything he wants. And sometimes God in his judgment gives us exactly what we want, even though what we want may not be what is best for us. I just kind of view it this way. Saul is wanting a message. He goes in this very improper, very evil way of doing it. And God, for whatever reason, just says, "Okay, I'm going to send a message to you. Go ahead." It's not that God is condoning. It's not that God is inconsistent. But God is delivering a message to this man. And so here's where we find Samuel involved in the story. When the woman saw, verse 12, Samuel, she cried out with a loud voice. And the woman spoke to Saul, saying, "Why have you deceived me? For you are Saul." Suddenly she begins to see what is happening when she realizes that there's something even beyond her experience base going on. And the king said to her, "Do not be afraid. What did you see?" And the woman said to Saul, "I see a spirit ascending out of the earth." And he said to her, "What is his form?" And she said, "An old man is coming up, and he is covered with a mantle." And Saul perceived that it was Samuel, and he stooped with his face to the ground and bowed down. And here's where now Samuel speaks from the other side. Now Samuel said to Saul, "Why have you disturbed me by bringing me up?" And Saul answered, "I am deeply distressed, for the Philistines make war against me, and God has departed from me and does not answer me anymore, neither by prophets nor by dreams. Therefore, I have called you that you may reveal to me what I should do." Well, let's talk about what we can gain from this. If someone came back from the dead and remembered the experience on the other side, would it be very hard for you to assemble a list of questions that you'd like to ask them? Wouldn't your curiosity just run wild with all sorts of, what about this and what about that? Well, by the way, there's very few people that we have this kind of insight into. Basically, there's three accounts in the Bible that talk about a view from the other side. There were people who were raised from the dead, but there's no sense in which either they had any recollection or they had any permission to talk about what transpired in their experience from the other side. But those three are basically are this one. There is the story that Jesus tells in the Gospel of Luke about the rich man and Lazarus. There is that conversation that comes from the other side. And then there is John when he is caught up into heaven and he sees things which will yet be in the revelation of Jesus Christ. Paul also had an experience of being caught up into heaven. He talks about it in 2 Corinthians, but he also says, I heard things that it's not lawful to speak. If I could just put that in simple everyday language, God told him, you've heard great things, but you can't talk about it. This is off limits for you to reveal. So very, very little information, but I want to share five things that I think you can determine about this ongoing opportunity to serve God. Number one, even death will not end our opportunity to serve. Number one, on the other side, believers are still acclaimed. If you go back to verse 3, you see that all Israel lamented for him. And when it got very difficult, who does Saul want to talk to? Who does he tell the medium to bring up? Who is he anxious to? Even after his death, among humans left on this earth, there is still this ongoing acclaim for what he had done. A while back, a few months ago, Julie and I and some friends were up at Spring Hill Cemetery. I don't know if you've ever been up to Spring Hill Cemetery. It looks down over Charleston, and we were there on a spring day. And in fact, a few weeks ago, on the cover of the bulletin, you saw a picture of the state capitol with all those trees. I actually took that picture from up in Spring Hill Cemetery. It's a beautiful view of Charleston. And but anyways, we were walking around. There's some really old, you know, there's some really old grave sites there. In fact, there's one section I found fascinating because you can see from the flags on it, it's a section reserved for soldiers who served in the Confederacy during the Civil War. And there's a section reserved for them there. So it goes way back. But you know, when you think about people that have died long ago, well, there's some sense that they're remembered. There's a marker and a name and a date and a dash between them. But many of the people who are buried there, not in time, not that long ago, there's no one left who would remember them, let alone just being forgotten. There's no one left. But there's a verse in Scripture, and you might want to jot this down if you're taking notes. It's found in Hebrews chapter 6 and verse 10. And this is the great thing about what we do for the Lord. There is something about servants of God that lingers on even in this world. Their influence, what occurs, but then God also intercedes in this. And it says in 6:10 of Hebrews, for God is not unjust so as to overlook your work and the love that you've shown for his name in serving the saints as you still do. God is not going to forget what you do for him. That was true for Samuel. That's true for us. So there's always the opportunity for us to continue to serve. What you do now in serving God has an impact far beyond even this lifetime. And for those of you who are parents, for those of you that have children that maybe they're out of the home now, but you still have some influence in them, I've thought of this many, many times. The influence you have on those children will far surpass the influence you have on anyone else ever in life. That's true of whatever you do. That's true of what I do. The three children that God gave Julie and I the opportunity to raise, and they somehow got there by the grace of God. And you know, that's the influence that matters, that lingers on. So let's just say this as we think about serving God. On the other side, believers are still acclaimed. So we need to serve knowing that what we do is worth it. Don't let Satan tear you down and make you believe that serving God is somehow second best, or make you believe the lie that somehow what you do isn't going to matter. It is going to matter. It is going to matter. And it is worth it because God is going to remember and your influence is going to go out beyond your life. That's true of Samuel. Now, let's get to the part where he speaks from beyond the grave, all right? And that's really found in verse 15. He speaks there, then he'll speak one more time in this text. But it says, he comes up in this vision, this apparition, this appearance, however you want to say it. She describes him as covered with a mantle, appearing aged. And Saul perceives that it is Samuel, and he bows down humbly. And Samuel said to Saul, why have you disturbed me by bringing me up? Do you get the impression that Samuel is not real excited to be where he is at this particular point? Now, we'll come back to that in just a moment. But the fact that he is engaged in this conversation tells us this. On the other side, believers are still acclaimed, yes, but on the other side, believers are still around. Can we say it that way? There is this thing of eternity. There is life beyond this grave. It is true. Now, I don't think I have to convince any of us that. But if you ever needed convincing, here's one good place that you could go to get convinced that someone has gone to the other side, has been called back by the permission of God. He speaks. He's knowledgeable. He's aware of what's going on. He's still around. This is not a myth. This is not just something we say to make others feel better. I remember sitting in my office some years ago with a man who's he's fairly well known in the educational world here in Kanawha Valley. But he called me up and said, I need to speak to a pastor. I'm doing a research project about faith, and I need to talk to a pastor to kind of be my fact checker. I said, okay, well, come on in. So we had this conversation, and as we were talking in our conversation, he tells me, he says, well, and I said, well, tell me about where you're coming at in faith and so forth. He said, well, I'm a non-theist. And I said, that sounds awfully lot like being an atheist. He said, well, I just prefer non-theist. It's not quite as, harsh sounding. I said, so you don't believe there's God? No, no, no. And I said, well, and I tried this argument. I said, well, why is it then that every people group, every culture has some sort of spiritual understanding? Now, they might worship shrubs or the sun and the moon or the stars or whatever. Doesn't mean they're worshiping the one true God. But there's not a culture that you find that is naturally disbelieving in something spiritual, something beyond this life. His answer to me was, well, I just have concluded in all of my studies that people just fear death and we're so afraid of dying that we've just created these make-believe systems to make us feel better so we won't be afraid of dying. Well, I then continued to share the gospel as best I could with him. It was interesting. Finally, he stopped me. He said, you know, you just sound like my grandkids. And I'm like, what? And come to find out, his daughter married one of those rascally Christians. And they go to a good church in another state. And the kids are going to Sunday school and the children's program, and they're learning Bible verses. And he says, yeah, they get on my lap and they pray. We're praying for you, Grandpa, that you'll get saved. And I'm thinking, wow, you think about God's given him a chance to hear the truth. But that's what the world sometimes says. This is a myth. This is not a myth. And if you want a historical evidence to say that it is real, here it is. And you already quoted, you stole a little of my thunder with quoting Jeremiah 29:11 tonight, because I'm going to share it right here, and that's fine. It's such a good verse, you could share it multiple times. But God does have a future for you. Now, he's primarily talking in that verse about Israel. He has a future for them. By application, he has a future for all that are his own. There's a future for you. I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans for welfare and not for evil, to give you a future and a hope. Jeremiah 29:11. There is this wonderful reality out there. So what should we do? On the other side, believers are there. They are still around. How should that affect us today? Here's another so. So serve them out of love and appreciation. If God has your future covered, if God has your eternity covered, we should with eagerness and with excitement give ourselves to serving Him. And I want to thank you for being the servants that you are. And some of you, I know, perhaps you think, well, I just don't do much. I don't have a great opportunity. I don't have great gifts. Or maybe my age or my situation or my time in life, I just don't have great gifts. Well, you do, and we collectively can serve together. I'm thank you, by the way, for your testimony and sharing your heart and what God, most of all, what God's done in your life. But it was well over a year ago, I get a call from Rex Whiteman from the mission, and he says we're some changes going on here, and we'd like to find a church where the ladies that are in this program at Brookside could have a place to attend church and to be part of, have that experience of church while they're going through this program of recovery and helping them get to a great place in life and doing it in a fashion that is very Christian and directed by the Bible. He says, do you think we could make a connection there? And I said, well, absolutely. We'll just have to figure out the logistics of however this works. And then he asked me, he said, well, we're looking for a place because not everywhere would the folks we're working with, not everywhere would they feel welcome. And I said, not a problem, because I know you. Thank you for confirming that. It's not a problem. So just your being here, just your being you, just your being the godly, loving people that you are, you're serving. Why? Because God has done so much for you. So keep it up. Keep it up. Number three, on the other side, believers are not only still around, they're also still aware. He is fully engaged in what is going on. If you go down to verse 16, then Samuel said, why do you ask me, seeing that the Lord has departed for you and become your enemy? Remember, Saul is asking, what am I going to do? He continues in verse 17, and the Lord has done for himself as he spoke by me, for the Lord has torn the kingdom out of your hand and given it to your neighbor, namely David. Samuel might be on the other side, but he's still fully aware of what God is up to and what God is doing and what God is determined to do. Verse 18, because you did not obey the voice of the Lord, nor execute his fierce wrath upon Amalek. He spells out the indictment in total here. Therefore, the Lord has done this thing to you this day. And we'll continue that in just a moment. But he's still fully aware. Sometimes I'm asked the question, Pastor, what are we going to know about what's going on earth when we're in heaven? And I say, I'm glad you asked that question because I can give you a really definitive answer. I don't know. I really don't. But in this case, it might indicate whether this was a special use for this particular man in time or whether we have some insight to what's going on earth. It's at least possible. I don't know as I could say whether it's so. But I will say this. This indicates this. Whatever level of information God lets us be privy to, we are fully aware of what's going on around us. And frankly, can we say it this way? We'll be a lot more aware than we are now. We don't get tired and feel like I got to nod off, you know, halfway through the day. We don't feel like I'm distracted. We don't feel like we have the pressure. We don't have all the frailties of our bodies that are imperfect and wearing out. We will be fully, fully, fully aware, fully engaged. And, you know, it's interesting that we need to, as we are aware here, we need to just stay focused on the main thing as a church and as individuals. There's two major strategies of that Satan employs in us. And by the way, he employed both of them in Saul's life that led him to this horrible moment in his life. Satan loves to distract, and Satan loves to divide. If he can distract us, he's got us right where he wants us. If he can divide God's people, he's got us right where he wants us, because suddenly our mission and our efforts to serve him become ineffective, and our testimony suffers. You know, Jesus said it this way. When they accused him, when he was casting out demons, he was accused, well, he's casting out demons by Beelzebub, the prince of demons. And Jesus makes this very powerful statement. He says, even applied to Satan, he says, a house divided against itself cannot stand. Satan knows if he can divide our house, whether that's your home, us as a church, we as believers, it's divide and conquer. And the division occurred between Samuel and Saul, between God and Saul, the distractions by the things that he wanted to keep that God said to destroy, the distraction by his own pride, his own self-aggrandizement, it led to this destruction. So, on the other side, believers are still aware, so serve, because today's decisions do have eternal results. Living for today does have impact upon eternity. How that all works and how it all connects together, it's sometimes hard to say, but it does matter. It does matter. And our choices as we choose to walk with the Lord certainly matter. Now, go back to verse 15. I've probably spent more time thinking about this verse than any of the rest of them in this passage. Now, Samuel said to Saul, why have you disturbed me by bringing me up? And I tell you how I used to think of that. Maybe you would say, maybe you thought of it this way. I mean, he's in heaven. He's lived out his whole life. He's served God faithfully. He died as an old man. He's just resting. It's kind of like You getting woke up from your nap, okay? You've kind of snuggled into the easy chair and you're just there, you know, snoozing away, and someone comes and wakes you up for no good reason. And I've always thought it just sounded like, I was resting, leave me alone. I want you to get the eraser out and just kind of erase that. Because we do have a few pictures of what goes on in heaven. Chapter 4 and chapter 5 of the book of Revelation are the best picture of what goes on in heaven. And what is going on in heaven is a massive amount of God's creatures, both angelic and the redeemed of humanity, gathered around the place where God is, worshiping Him incessantly, day and night, with enthusiasm and with their whole heart. I think what I would say to this now is, he was not complaining that he was called out of his slumber. Can we just say it this way? He was called out of church. He was called out of worship. He was called out of the presence of God. I was in God's presence, and now I have to come talk to you? Why did you disturb me? Say it this way. On the other side, believers are still adoring, and they're still adoring the Lord, still worshiping, still in love with Him. Now, I don't know if I could absolutely prove that, but as I have thought and meditated on it, that's my conclusion. He said, why have you disturbed me? It wasn't that he had nothing to do and he was disturbed from his nothingness. He had lots to do, lots of things on his agenda as he served and worshiped God, and you disturbed me. Well, if he is still serving in worship and whatever else on the other side, you know what? There is no retirement plan when it comes to God's service. Yeah, we might call it quits here and step into the other side, but there is still opportunities to serve Him. What will they be? What will it look like? Well, we are left to speculate somewhat, but there is still those opportunities to serve. Let's just say it this way. Worship, because worship is service. Worship is service. Part of our service, and a major part of our service, is just offering our praise to God. It talks about the 24 elders that are assembled around the throne there in those chapters in Revelation. And the number 24 is significant. And it appears to be that it's two sets of 12. And if you find the two 12s in the Old and New Testament, you think of the 12 tribes of Israel and the 12 apostles of the Lamb. And it seems to be a picture of Old Testament believers and New Testament believers all combined worshiping the Lord. And it says they had crowns on their head. There's a whole list of crowns in the New Testament that believers will receive for various qualifications. But you know what? It says they took the crowns from their head and they cast them at the Lord's feet, saying, "You are worthy." That is worship. That is service. And that's what we need to involve in. That's what we need to involve ourselves in it here. And let's just say the other one, this last one, this is likewise related. On the other side, believers are still available. Still available for serving. And let's pick it up in the verse 19, where he has one last thing in his availability to the Lord to do for Saul. "Moreover, the Lord will deliver Israel with you into the hand of the Philistines, and tomorrow you and your sons will be with me. And the Lord will also deliver the army of Israel into the hand of the Philistines." And that's the last words that we have of Samuel in the pages of Scripture. He delivered a harsh, stern, but direct message, the last message God ever sent through to Saul. And if you follow the story all the way down, it occurred exactly as it was prophesied by Samuel to happen. He was still available, still serving God, still delivering the message. Well, what will we be doing besides worship in heaven? It says in Revelation 22 that his servants will serve him. I don't know what all that could be, but there's a whole new created heavens and a new earth that is vast and large. What we'll be doing in it, what we'll be enjoying it, maybe developing it, I don't know. But there's plenty of opportunity to serve him. My brother, who's a pastor down in North Carolina, told the story when his daughter, who's now a mother herself, but she was about 4 or 5 years old, was driving home from church one day, and he hears out of the back seat words that no pastor ever wants to hear from his own family. A voice came over the back seat and said, "Dad, Church is boring. Well, they immediately, both he and his wife, honey, it's not boring. Your friends are there. We learn about Jesus. You love your Sunday school teacher, you know, all the stuff. Church is boring. And they just kept trying and finally just gave up. You know, what do we say? Our child thinks church is boring. You know, we failed. A few moments later, another voice comes in the back seat. Hey, Dad. What does boring mean? Well, I will tell you this. Whatever heaven is like and whatever experience is like, whatever service is like, we will never know what boring means. Because we're in the presence of God, redeemed, glorified, serving Him through all eternity. You know, and in some sense, what we do now, service might be good practice for eternity. And so let's just make sure that we, as this faithful servant that we know by the name of Samuel was faithful literally from the beginning. And we remember I told you at the beginning, it's one of the unusual people in the Bible. We have his story before his conception, and we have his story that stretches out even after his death. That's about as far as you can go in someone's story. But he was a servant of God all the way through. May God help us to remain serving. And what we should do, well, serve in the joy of an unending opportunity that God gives us to serve him.